Yes, welcome back. My Car Guru is on the air for this Thursday morning, and we say good morning to the Car Guru, Lenny Lawson. Hi, Lenny.
We say.
How you doing?
Doing good. Pretty much all we're going to say today. We're just going to say all the different ways to say hello. I like this one. Sup. That's
yeah.
A combination of what and us.
Yeah, it's just spelled.
Say,
sup.
Sup.
Yeah. Spelled S-U-P. That's it.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that would be a fascinating way to do this show. No, what I've been trying to do today, in fact, is to solve the silicone chip shortage.
All by yourself?
That's all by myself.
Huh.
But I quickly realized that wasn't going to happen. You know, it's really wreaking havoc in the electronics industry and in the car industry as well. I mean, we've got huge manufacturing plants in the that need to be building vehicles and sending them to me so that I can put them in the hands of new owners. But, you know, we're still getting shipments of cars, but some of the plants have either been slowed down or shut down because of the lack of integrated circuits. But I guess in some cases they're referred to as silicon chips, computer chips. You know, if you open up any electronic device, you're going to see all kinds of circuitry. And these chips are very important. Most of them are, all of them, I guess, are based on a semiconductor material called silicone or silicon.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the next to oxygen, it's the second most common element in the universe. And so we ain't going to run out of silicone. Silicon. Let's call it silicon. Because it doesn't have an E on the end of it. Is that okay with you?
Well, and like in California, they refer to it as Silicon Valley, right? So I guess we're supposed to say silicon, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So these chips are silicon. I say it's a semiconductor as opposed to a conductor or a insulator. Semiconductors, like a conductor allows the free flow of electrons, like electricity, through something. A semiconductor doesn't allow a free flow. It's inhibited in some ways. And an insulator absorbs and stops the flow. And so that's why they call these semiconductor chips, is because they're built on with a silicon base. And then the rest of it is just the circuitry. And over the years, you know, they've been able to make them extremely small. I mean, I look at this, I've got an SD card here somewhere on my desk that has a micro SD card. And Tim, that thing holds 2 gigabytes of information.
Mm.
And, I mean, you may not understand what a gigabyte is, but folks, that's a lot of information. That's probably more information than is in all the books in the Library of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is just phenomenal what they can put on these things. But because they are so integral in the construction of modern tools and electronics and stuff that we use, you know, there's a constant demand. It's almost become a commodity, Tim, like steel, you know, aluminum, glass, that kind of stuff. It is just a part of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the pandemic is to blame for short-circuiting the supply of these things. And it's really causing problems. I was going to review some of the deeper issues there, if I can get this article open up here. General Motors became the latest automaker yesterday to warn about this chip shortage and that it could put a crunch on their earnings. They're still going to be making in the billions, but they're not alone. Companies such as AMD, which makes computers, Qualcomm, Sony, you know, that's why it's so hard right now to get a PlayStation 5. You know, when you go, I mean, thank goodness it isn't near Christmas, because there would be a major shortage of those things. But anyway, one of the causes of this was that the pandemic triggered a huge surge in demand for computers, PCs, and other electronics because of all the remote work that was going on and the online learning. You know, they had to buy all of these computers for kids and stuff like that to be able to use at home, and they just stripped out the supply, and then because of the closures of some of the plants, it made it even worse. So if you hear about that, then that's exactly what's to blame. So I can't solve that problem.
No.
It's just not going to happen. But if you have a problem getting a vehicle, let's say that you have the desire for a Honda Pilot or something like that, and because of the plants have gone down, you're just going to have to order it. You know, if you want an F-150 or something like that, the supplies are still low on trucks and for all the makers. But as they ramp up, you know, what's happening, Tim, is we're selling them as fast as they come in. Normally, we would have a pretty good size inventory, and you know, we would just sell and bring our inventory down a bit, then bring it back up as shipments came in. So you're able to maintain a certain level of inventory, so you can provide selection and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we've just never been able to get it back to that level. So we're existing with lower inventories, but we're selling just about as many cars. We just can't build up that big selection. So we have people coming in and say, yeah, I want an F-150, I want it white. And I said, well, we have one that will be here in 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever. Excuse me. Sometimes we have them in stock. And this is true. It's not just me. It's every dealership is running into that. So don't get frustrated if you go to buy a Toyota RAV4 or a Chrysler or something or other. You know, the inventory is just not there. But, you know, if you're patient, if you can wait maybe a few weeks or a month or two and just order exactly what you want, then, you know, it will probably be there. So anyway, let's take our first break, and we'll be back here in just a minute.
And back here on My Car Guru for this Thursday morning, as you were talking there, Lenny, it just came to my mind that, you know, like a lot of other situations, you were talking about people having to be patient if they want a certain vehicle right now. And like a lot of other situations in the last 11 months, we've had to adapt and be patient.
Yeah, I'm not good at that.
Yeah, sometimes I need some work in that as well, but it's something that I think people have learned a little bit more about patience and adapting and so forth during this, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I've never been one very good at waiting in lines, you know, unless it's just really something that I just have to have. If I see too long of a line, you know, at a fast food place, I'll just bypass it and go someplace else. I wish I weren't that way.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I could just sit there and think and, you know, ponder on the meaning of life and stuff like that, but it just that doesn't work for me. I keep looking up front and say, now why are they staying at the window so long?
Mm-hmm.
That's just anyway. I'm used to you know, making decisions at work and home and different places, and then just going for it. And the delays don't work real good, but that is a character flaw for me. I'm admitting it right here to the 17 people that are listening. So. It's always 17, you notice? Whenever I say how many people, it's always 17.
Yeah, I would think that we would go up to 18 or 19 at some point.
I know. You would think so.
Yeah.
So we should have bought the Ford stock and the General Motors stock on January 1, it looks like, if the stock market had been open. You know, Tesla's been the darling of the stock market. It went up 700% last year. 700%! Can you imagine?
Wow.
A lot of people rode that wave. I talked to a guy the other day, put almost everything in Tesla. And he has reaped the rewards and a lot of short-term capital gain tax. But anyway, General Motors is up 29% since January 1. That's like a huge return for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're up 29%. Ford is up 34%. And I can tell you, you know, the reason is the market is just feeling better about General Motors and Ford and what they're doing to, you know, catch up with Tesla as far as the electric world, even though it's such a small percentage of their business. Really, I mean, it's minute share of their business now. But the media wants to see huge investments in technology, because they see, you know, what's happening with things like the concern over climate change and, you know, just the crowding in cities and the demands on the gasoline and stuff like that's going to have to be pumped. That's why, you know, it's one of the big pushes behind the Keystone XL pipeline, is that, you know, the environmentalists see that as just a way of continuing our dependence on oil, whereas, you know, a lot of companies and government bodies, especially states. I was listening, like Montana, the governor said they rely on gasoline and oil and stuff like that in order to drive the rural economy. You know, maybe in big cities and stuff like that, electric cars make sense. But when you're out, you know, in the Wyoming and Montana wilderness, you know, you don't want to have to worry about finding a place to plug in. And but General Motors and Ford have had some recent successes. Ford with finally getting the new F-150 out, the Bronco. There's just a lot of enthusiasm out there. And when you have enthusiasm for a company, then usually it's going to have a positive impact on their stock. So those of you who invest in the stock market know and care about this. The vast majority of people do not invest in the stock market. You know, they rely on mutual funds, or they, you know, they just put money in the bank or bury it out in the backyard in a tin can. That's what I do with mine. I have tin cans buried everywhere over my tin. I hope I can find them someday.
Yeah.
You want to come help? You want to come help me look?
Sure, I'll help you if I can bring a metal detector. How's that?
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about range. This is we got the new Mustang Mach-E that is going to be here in a few days. That's what they keep telling me.
Mm-hmm.
They had a hold on those vehicles because of some programming issues, or they just some kind of a quality thing that they won't disclose. But we have our first one is sold. Our second one we're supposed to keep. And keep it at the dealership and let people drive it. And then eventually, you know, we'll probably have an inventory of 10 or 15 of them. Who knows? It depends on demand and what happens. Range on these vehicles is supposedly going to be in the 300-plus. But recently, Electrek, which is they're a publication that tracks the industry, and the EPA has been providing range estimates. You know, there really are no good range estimates for electric vehicles. To be fair, that's also the case for gasoline-powered vehicles. I've sold many vehicles over the years that some of the people would say, you know, I'm getting better gas mileage than what it said on the sticker. And I've had just as many people say, you know, I'm disappointed in my gas mileage. I thought it would be better than it is. And so much of it depends on driving habits, and that is going to be true with electric vehicles as well. You know, range is based on the energy capacity inside the vehicle and its efficiency and how you drive. And there's a lot of different factors. Speed, temperature, elevation, you know, how many hills do you have to climb? And, you know, you're obviously going to get better range in Florida than you are in East Tennessee. Now, Tesla is the leader in the EV industry right now. However, they have been known to play with the numbers a little bit, and in recent years, some owners have been complaining about not being able to get near the range that Tesla is claiming.
Mm-hmm.
Here's some of the vehicles that are out there, and what the EPA estimate was and what the tested, Edmunds tested all of these vehicles to see what the real-world range is. So anyway, you look at the 2020 Chevrolet Bolt. That was their only electric vehicle. The EPA had estimated that it would go 259 miles on a charge. Edmunds tested it, and it went 277 miles. So that's good. That's 6.9% more.
Mm-hmm.
The new 2021 Ford Mustang Mach-E, the EPA estimate was 270 miles. They tested it, and it actually went 304 miles. So that's 12.6% better than what the EPA said. Hyundai has the 2020 electric vehicle that they sell, and it has pretty low range to begin with, 170, but it did 19% better in real-world testing. I'm having a hard time saying real and world right after each other. let's see. Boy, here's one with low range. The 2020 Mini Cooper SE, the range was only 110 miles. They tested it, and they got 150 miles out of it. But then you get down here into Tesla, and so the Tesla Model 3 was advertised to have 310 miles of range. They actually only got 256 miles out of it using the same exact test. That's 17.4% worse than what they estimated. Timmy, that could leave you stranded on I-26.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
81 or 40. I wouldn't like that at all.
No.
even their long-range version. No, I'm sorry, standard range version was off by minus 7.2%. So, you know, this is going to be something you're going to need to consider. I was talking to a guy yesterday, and he called and asked me about hybrid vehicles. And we were discussing whether there's really any advantage to buying a hybrid. So what is a hybrid? It doesn't have the battery capacity or the electric motor power that a full electric vehicle does. That's a BEV is the acronym for like what a Tesla would be called, or the Mustang Mach-E. It's a battery electric vehicle, but they call them BEV. Mm-hmm. They have hybrids that have a smaller battery and a much smaller motor. Sometimes it's integrated into the transmission, and a gasoline engine. And so, you know, when you first take off in the vehicle, we've sold hybrids for many years, the Ford Escape, the Ford Fusion, several other vehicles that we've had hybrid versions. Several Lincolns did.
Mm-hmm.
Nissan does. But you take off, basically, in electric power, but you can't really go down the road if you apply at any kind of highway speed over 40 miles an hour. If you put your foot on the gas, the engine is going to kick on. Now, the best-selling hybrid of all time is the Toyota Prius, and it's been around a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would hear people say they would get, 35, 40 miles per gallon on the highway and, like, 50 around town,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it would stay in the electric power for a lot of the time. Of course, that thing looks like a jelly bean anyway. A lot of the success of that vehicle is just sheer aerodynamics.
Mm-hmm.
But who wants to drive a vehicle that looks like that? Not me. But a lot of people do and have. But the hybrid vehicle, you're going to get anywhere from 5 to 8 miles per gallon better with a hybrid overall than you are in a gas version. These gasoline engines, Tim, have gotten so efficient. You know, the displacement is really small, like 1.5 liters, the 2-liter engines, and they, 35 to 45 miles per gallon on a gasoline engine. And I guess some people buy hybrids because, you know, they think it makes them responsible citizens, because at least they're not using as much fossil fuel and stuff. But that's really a lie. It's not that they're lying. It's just that they don't realize that, you know, the gasoline engine's doing the bulk of the work.
Uh-huh.
And the cost to manufacture, the production process to manufacture the batteries and the electric motors uses a lot of fossil fuels, okay, in order to make those. And the actual return takes years to offset the manufacturing pollutants, you know, that go into the air to make the electric batteries and the electric motors. So, you know, while you may feel great in your status as a environmentalist, tree hugger, whatever you want to call it, you know, it's really not valuable unless you're buying a fully electric vehicle, and even fully electric vehicles are getting the bulk of their power burning coal, natural gas. We do in Tennessee, you know, we have a lot of dams and stuff up and down these lakes, and they generate some power, but it's minuscule compared to the amount of power that comes out of the Bull Run steam plant down in Oak Ridge, which right behind that Bull Run steam plant is the biggest pile of coal you've ever seen in your life, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what it takes to provide the electricity that you are, you know, running those electrons into your electric battery. So to go ahead and feel good about it if you want to. And plus, the electricity is not free, as you will soon find out, and when you pull up to a charging station and you have to use your credit card to fill up your battery, and you have to sit there for 40 minutes to charge it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are the obstacles that we face. I think it's really helping that Ford and General Motors are really jumping on the bandwagon. I don't know when this transition is going to take place, but it's going to be a while. It's going to be a while before this is ubiquitous, as we like to say.
Yes.
So let's take our last break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Back here to wrap up My Car Guru for the last minute or so, and ubiquitous. I like that word you used today, and that's a fun word. You know what else is a fun word? Discombobulated. I like that word.
Is that a real word?
Yeah, discombobulated. Sure.
My wife and I were sitting on the couch this morning having our morning conversation. A bird landed on the railing right behind us, mm-hmm. outside, and just has a beautiful call, and was just sitting there just singing to us. And she said, "What kind of bird is that?" I said, "I think it's a Slapidosia bird." And she said, "You just made that up, didn't you?" I said, "Yeah." You know, but I did not make up ubiquitous. No. And you didn't make up. Yeah.
Discombobulated, so, yeah.
Discombobulated. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? Like it's blown apart?
Yeah, everything's kind of apart and confused and, you know, not together.
Kind of like my radio show. Kind of like my radio show.
Sometimes. Maybe not. I don't know.
What?
No, I'm
How
kidding.
Dare you?
I'm kidding.
I know you are. All right. Tomorrow we're going to talk about how to compare one vehicle to another and the way you need to think about it before you make a decision to buy. You know, there's so many people saying, well, do I buy the Honda or the Toyota? Do I buy the Chevy or the Ford? You know, which one do I like better? And so really there's a process. Really, the price doesn't matter yet until you decide what you want and what kind of features and benefits are important to you. So we'll be diving in tomorrow on that subject. Okay?
Sounds good. A little comparison shopping kind of stuff.
Yeah.
All right. We'll do that tomorrow on a Friday edition of My Car Guru. And, Lenny, we'll talk to you tomorrow.